It's Saturday morning. It's 10 o'clock. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And we'd like to thank everybody for listening today. If you're a regular, thanks so much for always being here. And if you're new to the show, you hopefully can stick around for an hour. We always promise you'll learn something, no matter how useful or useless it might be. At least you'll go away knowing something you didn't know before. Lots going on in the market this week, a lot going on in politics. If you feel a hand back around your wallet like it's trying to extract it, you probably will not be alone. We're going to talk about some of the implications for planning, given what the tax man is likely to do to us all, and a bunch of other things. Adam, at special request, has another installment of his series that I call Who Am I? And I can't call it anything else because I've called it that so long.
It works.
Yeah. And, of course, we'll do all the things we want to do unless you decide to pick up the phone and dial 904-222-8255 or 222-TALK, at which time we will immediately stop what we're doing and put you right to the head of the class. As usual, we will have a trivia question I'll give you right after the first break. And anything else that happens along the way is very largely dependent on you. So if they have questions or comments, personal financial planning, you name it, we'll answer it. Beautiful day, by the way. So if you're out and about, keep the radio on. And if you're listening by the internet or anything else, everything is looking and sounding good. It was a wonderful week, and I'll let Adam tell you all about it in the market.
Yes, it was. April is historically one of the best months in the stock market, and so far 2021 is not going to be the exception to that rule. It was a really strong week, even though we saw some pretty low volume. So apparently all those retail investors that piled into the market last quarter have disappeared. Maybe they went back to work as the country reopens. I don't know where they went, but apparently they are no longer around.
And good riddance.
Yes, I agree with that. For the week, in a reversal of the first quarter, the NASDAQ led the way higher at 3.1% gain, while the S&P was not far behind at 2.7%, and the Dow trailed but still posted a nice weekly gain of 2%. With the few extra days from last week that are part of this month and also the second quarter, the NASDAQ has now gained almost 5% in just those few trading days and is gaining on the Dow's year-to-date performance. The Dow is up 10.4% this year, the NASDAQ is now up 7.9%, and the S&P and the NASDAQ are now in pretty overbought territory, which was not necessarily true a week ago or 2 weeks ago. So don't be surprised if we see a little bit of a pause or a pullback or some consolidation in the coming weeks. They've really risen pretty quick, pretty fast.
Hey, you look at that.
Pretty high, pretty fast.
Look at that NASDAQ year-to-date number. That follows years at 35 and 43%.
Yeah.
This has been.
But you have to remember what happened last year. So
exactly right.
These numbers look inflated, but it's because they were so deflated, especially around this time last year. All the one-year numbers right now look just incredible. You're seeing numbers like 40, 50, 60% gains.
Yeah, but any good statistician can be a liar. And even by telling the truth, you're not telling the whole truth. All you got to do, if you want to express some very positive thing about yourself, your performance, whatever, you just go back and look for the exact correct starting date.
Right.
And you ignore everything that happened before that.
Yep. If you want to, for example, 10-year numbers a couple years ago were just incredible because you were coming off the Great Recession.
Right.
So if you come off a 55% drop in the market and then you flash forward 10 years that have been pretty good years, you're going to look pretty – there's going to be some pretty incredible numbers. But also in 2017, those numbers didn't look nearly as good. So it's really about your starting point.
Yeah, it is.
So there's been a lot of asset classes that have seen a reversal from quarter one to the beginning of quarter two. It's almost like a flip switched on the end of last quarter. Energy was the best performing sector in quarter one. It's now the worst performing in quarter two at negative 1.7%. Technology was the second worst performing sector in quarter one, and it is now the best performing sector in quarter two, up 6.7%.
Now, where do we go from there? Oh, yeah, that thing again. that diversification thing.
Exactly.
If you try to guess these sectors, I guarantee you, you're going to underperform the market.
You can't do it. You just don't know. The consumer staples have been the only consistent asset class in the S&P 500. They gained 1.8% in quarter one and 0.9% in quarter two. So right now they're tracking about the same quarter over quarter, but everything else has been a reversal. So
the same, that argument for the consumer staples is it ought to do what it does, which will never be spectacular, but it ought to do it every time because they're staples.
It should, yeah. But
of course it depends. Vary with the market.
Depends, yeah.
You got the systemic market movements. It'll always reflect that. But the performance of the asset class is a must-buy.
Yep. I was having this conversation in a client meeting yesterday, and the subject of it was Procter & Gamble.
Mm-hmm. Classic.
Yep. And the returns had been good over the last 10 years or however long this person had owned it. And the argument was, well, there are other things that have done better. Well, yeah.
Well, yeah.
But you don't buy Procter & Gamble as a growth stock to outperform the market. You buy it as what it is. It's a tried and true blue chip value stock with a great track record, and it's probably going to continue to do the same thing.
Back in your old P&G days, many
I started
years ago,
my career there, for those of you that don't know.
We started looking into the company a little bit because Adam was joining it, and one of the things we found out was there were a lot of employees of PG, including truck drivers, things like that, that had a lot of years in. And they were all millionaires.
Yeah, that company has minted so many millionaires.
And it's just slow and steady, constant growth.
No doubt about it.
Wonderful investment long term.
Yep, it has been and most likely will continue to be. But it's not going to be Netflix. It's not going to
be. Not going to be Apple.
Nope, it won't be. It's not possible. Growing something like that 50% year over year, unless they do an acquisition, is just not going to happen. So the other thing that reversed from the first to the second quarter was growth stocks. In quarter one, they underperformed value by a pretty wide margin. In quarter two, they've been outperforming. So interesting to see how things switch quickly and suddenly and without any real reason behind that, outside of you could point to interest rates, which I'll get to in a little bit. International markets have been all over the place in the second quarter. Russia, after posting a 6.8% gain in the first quarter, is down 3.2% in the second. India posted a similar gain in the first quarter, down 1.5% in the second. Brazil posted a loss of almost 10% last quarter. It's now positive by just under 0.5%. And then the only consistent has been China. They posted a small decline last quarter, and they posted a small decline this quarter. European countries are looking a little better. France, Germany, Spain, and the UK all had nice gains last quarter and are up solidly this quarter as well. And emerging markets were positive last quarter but saw a significant drop in March. And then that's reversed. They have posted a small gain in the second quarter. So really, again, just an argument for diversification. You can't predict how these things are going to go from quarter to quarter, from month to month, or week to week.
Yeah, what are the things that's looming out there is all this talk about tax hikes. The one thing we do know is that you cannot improve the economy by raising taxes. That just, it doesn't work. It has never worked. And sometimes that talk will, in itself, it will kibosh the market. But this very resilient market, is particularly this week, shrugged it all off. Very interesting.
I think there's a reason for that. Let's get into
it
after
the
break.
Okay, don't go anywhere. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And we have a little bit more market wrap to do right after a trivia question brought to you as usual by Ken Bales at First Coast Alarm. Call Ken at 904-636-7888. There are 110 major metro areas in the U.S. by, I don't know who keeps all these statistics, but by the people who keep statistics, they have designated 110 metro areas, and they measure things like job postings. All but six of those 110 now have more job postings than they did back in February 20th, which we refer to as the pre-COVID days. Of all those six that have less job postings, what is the absolute worst? The ones with the least job postings compared to what they had in February 20.
All right.
American metro areas. And by the way, if you want to take a shot at that, it's 904-222-8255. All right. A few more things on the market, and I'm particularly interested in the interest rate discussion.
Yeah, that's a good one. So interest rates in the first quarter, the reason that we saw some asset classes fall in the first quarter, especially at the end of the first quarter, most of them actually didn't even fall below. They still posted gains for the quarter, but they had been up huge in the first half of the quarter. And then the second half of the quarter, the market really freaked out over interest rates and inflation. And you saw the 10-year Treasury rate go from under 1% up to 1.7%, a 70% gain in less than 3 months. Pretty incredible. And it was daily. The rates were moving up. And then all of a sudden, at the end of the quarter, that started to reverse. It went from about 1.75 down to about 1.65 in the last few trading days or last couple of weeks. And so they've sort of reversed. And then that has, as you've seen that happen, you've seen the things that dropped, specifically the NASDAQ, small caps, gold and silver. They all reversed and started moving up again after moving down during the hike. So interest rates have really had an effect on the market recently. Now, the Fed came out. I don't know if I've ever seen the Fed as dovish, as willing to support the market, as speaking as plainly as Powell has over the last few months.
I have a couple words about it in my notes, but I can't use them on air.
Okay. Well, that's what he's doing. You don't have to like it, but that's what's happening. And he is just adamant that they are not going to raise rates till 2023. I think it's the wrong strategy.
You can't possibly shoot your neck out that far. This is April of 21.
Yeah, it doesn't make sense to me. He needs to hedge his bets at some point.
Years?
The market's not going to like that, by the way, when he does it.
No.
But it is. He's got to do it in the next year. I don't see how we can get through next year without an interest rate hike. I think it's going to be needed, especially with the inflation data that we saw this month for March.
Needed by some and wanted by many.
Yeah, the PPI report showed a 1% increase in March.
That's following February's 0.5.
And that's a big increase. And so the Fed has been saying they want to see inflation. Well, they're getting it.
Yeah, good luck.
They're having to admit it now.
They're still in denial because they look over the course of 12 months.
Right.
And what happened 12 months ago?
So
deflation for about 2 months.
Yeah, and so the year-over-year number went up to like
4.2,
somewhere in there. But you do have to look at where 1 year ago we were. So that is a valid point.
Yeah.
I think the year over year numbers about 6 months from now will be really telling.
Yeah,
still in the fours.
Yeah, that's a rolling average. So when you throw out April next month, and then you throw out May the next month, and you get into June the month after that, you're going to see some mightily different figures.
Well, if you do, and if they're higher, that's going to be concerning.
It will be.
Yeah, and especially with the Fed saying no interest rate hike. So we'll see what happens. The economic data in the past couple of weeks has been nothing short of spectacular. The ISM non-manufacturing report came in at 63.7. That's the highest reading
record
in the history of the report. Yeah. And for those of you that don't know, anything over 50 signals expansion. So 51 to 55 is considered a good reading. Anything in the high 50s is great. 63.7 is crazy.
Yeah, the PMI in the goods sector was the best in 40 years.
Yeah. Yep.
So that would be headline news, except for the services.
Yeah, it was. Now, it makes sense because we are seeing California start to reopen some bars and restaurants and New York and some other major metropolitan areas. So
how many million are we still short to catch up to last year, February?
Millions
overall?
Of what?
People working.
So the continuing claims are at about 3.7 million.
Yeah, but I think they're, and you count the ones that are pulling out of the workforce or
right.
have pulled out, it's something like 9 or 10 million.
It's up around that number, yeah.
So anybody who thinks that all these people going back to work is going to be immediately inflationary, you got to allow for all that to start happening.
There's some interesting things going on in those numbers, too, in the jobs data. That one of the few numbers that didn't blow out this week was the initial jobless claims. They actually came in higher than expected and higher than last week at 744,000. The expectation was below 700,000, and last week was about 728. Despite that, continuing claims did fall slightly to 3.7 million. Jobless claims have now gone in the wrong direction for about 3 weeks. Mm-hmm. It's interesting because the JOLTS report, the Job Openings and Labor Turnover Survey, it showed that we are within 171,000 open jobs of the all-time record set in November of 2018.
So you 9 or 10 or 11 million people out there who don't want to go back to work, all you got to do is call the U.S. Treasury and thank them very much for sending you so much money every week.
That is part of the problem, especially when you look at the areas of that the job openings are in. The strongest ones include food services, manufacturing and transportation, and then the ones that aren't as strong are mining and logging, information, finance, and construction. Construction is a little bit weird. You would think that there would be more openings there, but
construction is probably a factor partly of really bad weather in February. I think you'll start to see that number perk up real fast.
But the thing is, the places with the fastest amount of growing job openings are food services, manufacturing, and transportation. Mm-hmm. Now, those areas outside of some specific manufacturing jobs are not the jobs that require the highest skill, specific skill levels or education. Those are jobs that are open to a lot of people with a lot of different skill sets. So it's surprising to see that many open jobs in that area without a lot of, and a lot of people not working. You would think that they would be piling back into those jobs. It's going to be inflationary for wages in that area. Which is a good thing. I think that those are probably – food service is probably one of the underpaid parts of the economy. So if you're in that industry and looking around, look for the best job you can find because they're out there and they're needed. And anecdotally, you can't find a restaurant owner right now who is finding good labor. It's really tough out there.
No, and that, as you said, it's inflationary, but it's also very regional. You'll see – the prices you're going to pay somebody in Mississippi are not the same as New York.
No.
And the talk of a minimum wage wouldn't hurt New York a bit at $15.
Because they're already paying more than that.
Yeah, but go down to Mississippi, Alabama, try to pay those people $15, and you're going to show a real hardship on the business owners.
No doubt about it. But it's interesting to see the big gap in jobs open and people not working, and then why isn't that closing quicker? I think you have to look in part at the government handing out large paychecks every week and think, okay, we need to maybe start thinking about tapering that back.
All right. We had a great question from a client in the last couple of days. Is this the beginning of inflation? I think that is one of the best questions ever. And my answer is yes, in a nutshell.
I think no. I think it's the middle of inflation. We've been in inflation for quite some time.
That is a better answer.
And we are continuing to see inflation. Are we seeing it start to accelerate? I believe so.
I believe we are. And that producer price index number was rather shocking. Now, what is an investor to think, do, and say at a time like this? Well, what likes inflation?
There's actually a lot of things that like inflation.
A lot of things do.
Yeah.
Me?
Not too
and
much
some
inflation,
other
thing.
No, but I'd like to see the old 3 to 5 days come back. But the stock market, for one thing, the general stock market loves inflation. Because what happens in inflation?
Price
people's
increases.
Costs go up, price increases go up. If you make the same margin on bigger sales, you make more money.
It's true.
And that accrues right back to the stock, and it can increase dividends. Well, another thing that loves inflation is real estate because they stopped making it, except in Holland. They sometimes make some.
Yeah, I don't think they do that much anymore.
Probably not. And precious metals. Oh, wait a minute. They're chilly right now. What's going on with that?
Well, they were.
Yeah, I'm looking purely short term, and you can't look at these things short term. They've been moving.
Yeah, they are. They're on a long-term uptrend right now. Yeah, so they did pull back last quarter, though.
How about Treasury inflation-protected bonds?
That's a good one.
We've been talking about these all year, and our early this year, opinion was not yet. We're waiting for the price to drop. Guess what? It didn't drop.
Well, it dropped a little bit.
A little bit.
Yeah.
But it's not dropping anymore, and I think tips are really a good hedge against what's probably going to happen for the next few months. I can't guarantee anything any more than anybody else can, but I think those, if you concentrate on those four areas, you'll do pretty well. You got to go back to the early word today, diversification. Hedge your bets every way you can. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And the trivia question is still out there. Of the 110 metro areas in this country, only six have less job postings today than they did February of 20 in the pre-COVID days. Of those six, what is the absolute worst? Good morning, George.
Good morning. New York.
Pardon me?
New York, he said.
Oh, New York. New York is not right.
Not right, okay.
But it's close.
Is that in the top six?
I might have the rank.
Or bottom six, I guess?
No, I don't have the ranking with me. Sorry about that. But yes, it made top six.
Okay, I got that one more I called about. What's your opinion of I-bonds now?
I love them. Probably more so than most people love them. I love them.
Can they be bought? I have a Schwab account. Can Schwab buy them for me and put them in my brokerage account?
Well, let's talk for a second about I-bonds versus tips, which, you know, they're all the same thing, essentially. When I-bonds first came out, you bought them from Treasury Direct. And
right.
You could buy, $5,000 a year or something like that. And you had to hold them 5 years. I prefer using the exchange-traded fund that holds only Treasury inflation-protected bonds. And a couple of the ways to do that, with your Schwab account, I think it's SCHD.
No, that's the dividend stocks.
I can't remember that. Look it up in Schwab. The exchange-traded fund, or ETF, that deals in inflation-protected bonds. And take a look at that thing. What I like about that one, and then iShares also has TIP, TIP, and they are constantly exchanging bonds. And I like that right now, because if you buy one today, it has a coupon rate on it that's too low.
It's SCHP.
SCHP, okay. And if you buy the ETF, bonds mature all the time, and they get replaced by new bonds. The newer bonds are going to have progressively higher coupon rates. They're all going to inflate at the same level. So I think you get a little leverage by buying it in the ETF. Also, there's absolutely no limitation on holdings when you buy I-bonds from the Treasury. There's a time frame. When you buy the exchange-traded fund, there is not a holding period. And third, and perhaps best, is that these funds, the SCHP and the TIP, pay a monthly dividend. So if you're looking for a cash flow, I'm that kind of guy. I like my monthly dividends more than almost anything. So if you're looking for that, then you should look at those. And if you're looking for a longer-term hold, there's nothing wrong with buying bonds from the government. It's just easier and more practical this way, I think.
Yeah, sounds like it. Okay, I appreciate that.
Like I say, I'm a real fan of them. I'm looking at these 0.5 and 1.0 PPI increases. The consumer price index is starting to show it. You go to the gas pump or Publix, you see it, you feel it, you experience it. It's coming. It's here, as Adam said, but it's coming bigger.
Yep. So, yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
And I looked it up, George. New York was actually eighth. They were just outside the bottom six. They actually have 3% more postings today than they did in February. But there's only one that is slightly lower than that and still positive. So,
okay.
So pretty bad.
Eighth overall out of 110. Yeah, not too impressive, is it?
No.
No.
Well, thanks a lot. I appreciate it.
We appreciate you listening and calling. Thanks. All right. That thing about I-bonds, I know a lot of people disagree with me, but I look at Powell, the Fed chairman, and he says, any inflationary pop is likely to be
temporary.
Yeah. Which part of that is temporary? You mean, let's say there's a price level today, and there's a price level in 6 months, and 6 months is a lot higher. What does that mean? A year from today, it's going to still be at that 6-month level, or does that mean it's going to come back to today's? I don't think so.
I don't know. I don't know what he means.
The one thing that will happen when conditions change, the one thing that will happen is that oil prices will fluctuate. Now, they're not going to fluctuate right away because Biden has shut down so much drilling and leasing and so on. And second, please. George.
Yeah, good morning, guys.
Hey, we had two Georges in a row within a minute. That's interesting.
Right. I worked with computers in 12 countries, and some of the – I started out on my tools but then went to engineering school and in nine states. And I just want to mention the two levels of artificial intelligence which are being used to adjust the stock market, make people money. And, by the way, your methodologies counter a lot of the stuff they're doing because you deal with quality stocks and certain methodologies, which is good.
Yeah.
But phase one is when you tell an artificial intelligence computer to do a small subroutine. Now the kids call it apps.
Right. Yeah.
And it helps you with medical problems or with seeing which way a stock might go, et cetera. But then there's a level two, and that's the scary one. And the Chinese have already implemented those in the TikTok computers. They own 2,000 companies here, and they're using them in various places. And they can actually change people's behavior and also change what's happening in the industry so that they can take over certain companies. And it's the level two is when you tell the computer general statement, but you let it run itself. It becomes kind of the Skynet type of system from the movie, where it goes out and continually learns how to do something more effectively. And so I think everybody should kind of do some reading on this as well as the things that you're teaching and that you're using in your business, which are really good.
Well, do you have any good books or anything you recommend on
AI? Well, the internet has a lot on it. There's one called one site called StopTheCrime.org, which has been dealing with smart meters and all kind of other stuff. But they're talking about how we did some secret treaties with other companies on this countries on this mess, and it kind of tells you how they're stumbling around. And I was asked to get involved on the South China Sea with countering some of the stuff the Chinese were using, because they were using quantum waves. These things go right through buildings and through the earth. They're hard to counter, and they ended up here. They ended up just rerunning all of the programs in a better way to overwrite what had happened with people. So the key words are artificial intelligence, quantum waves, quantum computing. Just look those up on the internet, and you'll find a significant amount of information just starting to pop up, and various people are working on the issues from different standpoints. In other words, it might be the Chinese breaking into our power grid, or it might be this behavior changing stuff. It might be affecting Congress. It might be affecting business. They're individual kinds of artificial intelligence. And so, you know, just do some reading and start checking into it. And it's the next frontier of knowledge that which we need to keep track of.
Well, all I can say about that, George, is that would explain a lot about what's going on right now, especially in Washington.
Eight hertz. Let me tell you this. 8 hertz can invoke riots.
Yeah, well, I believe.
Now, if you search for, if it's still there, the powers that be have been ripping the stuff off the internet, but search for warfare and frequency. That's the third leg of this thing.
Hmm.
And Pavlov won the Nobel Prize in 1904 for changing the motions of dogs.
Right.
But, of course, Stalin came along, and Pavlov was a pure communist. And he helped Stalin do his thing. Of course, you know, communism has been responsible for 100 million murders in the world, and they did maybe about 20. And Pavlov wanted behavioral stuff that would change how people think and kind of attack people. And Pavlov worked for the Russian military college, and they weren't training dogs at the Russian military college. They were figuring out how they could get a leg up and, you know, take over other countries. So he used a little bit on Hitler at that time. And at the end of World War II, we were actually using artificial intelligence, but it was with vacuum tube type computers. Eisenhower wanted that. And so there's a lot to this if you start doing the words. And the doctors involved who were into this were Pavlov, P-A-V-L-O-V, and then Royal Rife, M-D. You look up Royal Rife frequencies, and you'll start your education.
interesting information, very important
trivia.
And we will. Oh, you want to take a quick shot at the trivia?
No. Go ahead. I call so much that let somebody else do it.
All right. Yeah, the artificial intelligence will replace man-made intelligence quicker if we keep degrading our man-made intelligence.
I thought it already had.
Well, I'm sure in some institutions it's pretty much a done deal. All right, when we get back, Adam has his Who Am I segment, and I'll see what I can do about a few quick words about tax planning in the month of April and beyond in 2021. The times, they are a-changing. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And we were just having a little chuckle about something that I was about to bring up, so I'll jump into it. You might have noticed that the sneaker industry is kind of on fire. Now, that goes for a lot of things, including prices. And Adam was remembering when Air Jordan came out and hit $100, and his parents told him, no way.
Nope, I never had a pair.
Well, they're now, what, 193?
The most recent pair on Nike's website was 190.
190, okay. And
which actually, if you think
that's
about it,
cheap,
it's not that bad.
Compared to the 100 back then.
Yeah.
So you got to think that mass production has done something. But you found a couple other examples between, what, 555?
And 750, and those are mass-produced, not even special edition type things. One of them looks like it has a suspension system in the shoe. It's bizarre.
Well, strangely or not, I'm not sure, that industry has spawned some little cottage industries. And the one that I'm reading up on, a guy named Steve Greer, in 2010, founded a company to clean, restore, and customize sneakers, which has gotten him over 1 million followers on his YouTube channel, and made him a fairly wealthy man. So as business got better and better, he started to sell little franchises, and that's going very well. He says kids would come up to us now and say, hey, we started our own business with your products. So the more I thought about it, I said, why don't we make that easier? So we offer an executive kit that comes with everything you need, and we have a membership that allows them to get training, certification, etc. So the club costs $228 and a monthly charge of $14.99. So now these kids that are getting into this, obviously the ambitious ones, are making $1,200 a month on their side hustle, which is getting harder and harder, of course, to do. But sneaker cleaning, renovating, and customization is a hot new little cottage business.
Who knew?
Who knew? All right. Who am I?
All right. Millionaire number 7. And I know I told you last week I was going to stop at 6, but I actually got some pretty good feedback about this segment.
I think everybody enjoys these stories because it's all of the good news.
Yeah, so I decided to go ahead and continue it. And this one's pretty good, I thought. This man was born in Antioch, Tennessee in 1960 to real estate developers. So he didn't exactly come from nothing. So his story is more of a riches to rags to riches story. So it's a little bit different than what we've seen before.
Yeah, that's the atypical American dream.
But before I get into it, it looks like we have another caller. So,
uh-huh. Good morning, Larry.
Quick guess.
Yes.
Alaska.
That is not the answer. Sorry.
Well, you're thinking along the right lines, though.
Yeah. Yeah.
Thrill of the hunt.
I like people who think about it.
just a little word of advice.
Yep.
Be highly scam aware. They're running copies of bills. They're stealing property. Be highly scam aware.
Yeah, it is.
It's tax time. It's rampant right now.
Yeah.
And it gets more and more clever.
Perfect. Everything's perfect.
Yep. I just do what I do. Ignore everybody. You're far better off.
That's good advice. Y'all have a good day, gentlemen.
Thanks, Lou.
Is that another call, or I can't tell? Oh, maybe it's coming in. All right. So this millionaire's early life was filled with entrepreneurial ventures, and it was for a very good reason that I will get to you after this.
Good morning, Mike.
Hi, good morning, gentlemen.
Hey, Mike.
What's happening?
Hey, nothing much at this end. Quick stab at the question.
Yeah, sure.
Not an easy question, but I'll say the Atlantic City, Ocean City area of New Jersey.
Oh, that is a fabulous guess. It's just not a correct one.
Okay, gentlemen. All right.
Thank you. Appreciate your calling.
You got it. Enjoy the rest of the weekend.
Thank you.
All right. So at age 12, he went to his dad and asked him to buy him something. And his dad, being a product most likely of the Depression and that era, said to him, "You're 12. You're old enough to work. Get a job. That's where money comes from."
So I love it.
And he did. He went out and had 500 business cards printed up to start a lawn care business. And it didn't say how that went, but you have to think that he probably started earning some money because he used that to start other business ventures throughout his school years, including at one point he sold leather bracelets and a variety of other trinkets, and just an entrepreneurial type of guy inspired by his dad telling him, "No, you can't have that." So pretty good stuff. At age 18, he passed the real estate exam and began selling real estate while attending the University of Tennessee. He used the proceeds from those sales to pay for school while he was going through it, and he ended up earning his degree in finance and real estate. By age 26, this was in 1986, he had amassed a considerable portfolio of real estate worth over $4 million and had a net worth of over $1 million.
I know where you're going.
He was making $20,000 per month in his business, and life was pretty good. However, a law was passed in 1987 called the Competitive Equality Banking Act. It caused several banks to change hands, and what happened to this guy was that his lines of credit were called in. He had about $1.2 million in leverage with these banks, and they ordered him to pay it in 90 days or less. He was unable to pay. He ended up filing bankruptcy in 1988 at the age of 28. Now, can you imagine? You're a millionaire by age 26, and you're bankrupt at 28? Pretty incredible. For some, this might have been the end of the entrepreneurial journey, but not for this former millionaire. He began his journey to recovery from financial devastation and turned to his church for comfort. Eventually, this led him to giving financial advice to members of his church. Apparently, this was pretty well-received advice because in 1992, he published his first book called Financial Peace. This led to a radio show in Nashville called The Money Game that he did on a part-time basis. In 1994, he developed Financial Peace University, a 9-lesson video-based personal finance course. From 2007 to 2010, his show was aired on the Fox Business Network. Since his rough start, he has published 6 best-selling books and has built a nationally recognized brand. He employs over 900 people and measures his success not by the amount of money coming in, but by the number of people he has helped. Today, his radio show is a 3-hour show that is rated in the top 5 in the country with over 13 million listeners each week on more than 600 stations. He preaches about staying out of debt, avoiding credit cards, and being fiscally responsible. He frequently pulls out his wallet and shows that he only has 4 pieces of plastic in it: a personal debit card, a corporate debit card, a driver's license, and a concealed weapons permit. Not only is Dave Ramsey's story a great story about going from riches to rags to riches, it is even more interesting because of what he chose to do with his experience. He took the worst moment of his life and turned it into a hugely successful venture that helps people try to avoid the same mistakes that he made. Dave has now amassed a fortune of more than $200 million by helping people get their finances in order, and in many ways is an example of why the American dream is alive and well.
And he coined a slogan that made him very popular.
Yep.
"I'm debt-free."
Yep, repeated often on his 3-hour radio show and podcast every day. In fact, I believe with the passing of Rush Limbaugh, his podcast or radio show, one of the two, moved into the number one spot.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, I've often said about Dave Ramsey, I don't agree with everything that he says. But 90% is not bad.
Yeah.
And it seems to be working for him.
It's true. He does essentially, in a way, he does what we do. And but he has helped more people than we will ever meet. That is
right,
for sure.
And you can tell when you listen to him for quite a while, his background has influenced a lot of his opinions in ways that are maybe not what would be considered conventional to all of us, but I sure as heck am not going to argue with him.
No.
Because $200 million from destitute?
Yep.
Not bad, Mr. Ramsey. I think it's a well-kept secret just how popular his show is.
It's crazy.
It is. Well, I'm not going to get far into this, but I want to remind you that there's a date coming up soon, April 15th, and a lot of people know that we've been given a reprieve out till May 17th, but it's not for everything. Remember that if you're filing quarterly tax estimates, the 1040 ES form, the first one for this year, for 2021, is due on April 15th. Do not fail to file it and send in any money you owe, or you're going to start accruing taxes and interest. And if there's dumb money to be spent, that's the dumbest there is, I think. Don't pay interest and penalties to the government. Honolulu. You think about it, Adam nailed it right away. It makes sense. It's the worst job market here because the entire economy over there is based on tourism, which has been suffering. On the other hand, they're selling so many plane tickets nowadays, I got to think they'll be bouncing back really, really soon.
I agree.
And it's a beautiful place, as you know. All right, we'll be back next week. Thanks for listening. This is the Bandway Financial Hour.